the March 24th, 2026 meeting of the Montville Planning and Zoning Commission to order. And our first order of business, or second order of business, is the Pledge Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let me get my thing out.
Roll call, Mr. Secretary.
Okay, let me get the thing out, if I could find it. Where the hell they put it?
Johnny.
No, they're using a little sheet. Oh, we leave it in here for now. Oh, here we go.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, we have a little break. Okay. Commissioner Longton?
Not here.
Absent. Commissioner Terry?
Here.
Present. Commissioner Gillette?
Here.
Present. Vice Chairman Pike?
Here.
Commissioner Desjardins, I am here. Commissioner Lundy, absent. Commissioner Kobelik?
Here.
Commissioner Summers?
Here.
And Chairman Pena?
Present. We're going to see Mr. Myers for Sarah Lundy this evening.
Okay.
Okay, make a note of that, please.
Okay.
We have no additions or changes to the agenda. Welcome, everybody. It's nice to see a lot of faces in the crowd. For clarification, because there's been some confusion with a lot of items going on lately with the commission, tonight is not the presentation for revive and renew of Route 32 and 163. So if you're here for that, that's Thursday at 6 p.m. Other than that, you're all very welcome. It's good to see you here. Moving on, we're going to look for approval of the January 27th, 2026 regular meeting minutes.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Entertain a motion for approval of February 11th, 2026 special meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone abstain? Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay. And finally, approval of the March 11th, 2026 special meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
And any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain?
Abstain.
Okay. Very good. Note for the record, Josh Kobelik. Okay. Item six, public hearing this evening. This is 26ZC1-50 Cook Drive, 099-009-001. Zone change from R20 to government. The owner is the town of Montville. The applicant is Barry Parfit, professional engineer from Wright Pierce, on behalf of the WPCA. Entertain a motion to open the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Public hearing's open. Meredith, presenting first?
I am.
Okay, thank you.
As the chairman said, this is for a zone change from the current zone of R20 to the proposed zone of government. The background on this property, according to the assessor's record, this parcel was obtained from WICH Inc. in April of 1999, and the original water tank was installed in the year 2000. A variance was granted by the ZBA on September 7th, 2022, in order to construct a new tower, water tower, and all of the accessory structures. A site plan for the new 531,000 gallon glass fused to steel water storage tank was placed adjacent to the 590,000 gallon water tank, and that was approved by this commission on November 8th, 2022. Zoning permit number 23ZP129 was issued on August 18th, 2023, in accordance with that site plan. The applicant did call for an as-built inspection by the ZEO, and when she went there, she determined that some of the items were not constructed according to that site plan and did not meet the variance. So they are coming in now to change this to government zoning, which does not have any setbacks. So they would be in accordance with that zone. They are asking for this zone change from R20 to government for water utility purposes. The applicant further states that the parcel is currently utilized by the town of Montville as the site of a water storage tank that serves the public water system, which is operated by the Water Pollution Control Authority. The existing residential zoning does not reflect the actual and intended municipal utility use of the property. Therefore, this zone change is requested to accurately align the zoning designation with its current and long-term public utility function. The parcel is abutted to the north and east by 48 Cook Drive, which is owned by K2 Towers 3 LLC, and currently has a tower and a utility building on the property. To the south is 1758 Route 32, which is zoned R20M and has an approved site plan for a 200-unit multifamily structure. To the west is 57 Cook Drive, which is zoned R20, and its current use is residential with a single-family residence. Our zoning regulations, Section 14, Government District, states the purpose is listed as follows. This zone is intended for state, local government, and utility land uses such as schools, fire stations, municipal buildings. These uses may be site-specific depending on the needs of the community. Section 14.2.1 states permitted uses are government offices, libraries, schools, public safety facilities, and public utilities. There's no minimum requirements for lot size, frontage, nor setbacks in the government zoning district. The current zoning district of R20 has a minimum lot frontage of 80 feet, a minimum lot size of 20,000 square feet. This parcel is 10,771.25 square feet with no frontage. The property is accessed via an easement in favor of the town of Montville. Therefore, this would be considered a non-conforming lot. The POCD existing land use map shows the current use of this parcel as utility. The future land use map indicates this parcel in the housing investment area, which includes lots less than or equal to 20,000 square feet within a sewer district boundary, neighborhood conservation areas, infrastructure areas, and municipal uses. The applicant has provided, as part of the zone change application, the answers to the zone change evaluation criteria as part of their application. This is not part of our regulations. However, it is included in the application documents on the Town of Montville website. Staff did go through those questions and provided their answers. I will read them into the record. Question number one, is the proposal in conformance with the plan of conservation and development, but more importantly, is it in conformance with the intent of the zoning regulations? Staff feels that this zone change is in conformance with the intent of the zoning regulations as outlined above and consistent with the existing and future land use maps provided in the 2022 POCD. Question two, was the original classification given to the land inappropriate or improper? Staff feels that this parcel was not originally owned by the town, nor had a utility use until 1999 and 2000. Therefore, the original classification given would have been appropriate. However, given the historic use of the property for a government utility, the proposed classification is not appropriate. Three, have there been major changes within the area involved which were not anticipated in the adopted plan of conservation and development and comprehensive plan, which have substantially altered the basic character of the area? No, the POC indicates an existing utility use of the property and the future land use map shows municipal use. 4, is the proposal going to benefit the community as a whole and not solely as a particular individual or group of individuals? Staff feels that the proposed change to government will benefit the community as a whole, as the parcel will continue to be used as a public utility and will provide flexibility for any future infrastructure needs. 5, is the area suitable for use and other uses permitted by right in the new zone and will change, and will the change encourage the most appropriate use of the land in the public interest? Yes, the area is suitable for the established public utility use that benefits the public interest. 6, does the proposal represent spot zoning? No, the purpose stated in the government district reads in part, these uses may be site-specific depending on the needs of the community. This application was referred out to the building department, the fire marshal, public works, the assessor, the police department, and DEEP on January 14th, 2026. The application and map entitled Zone Change Map 50 Cook Drive, Mottville, Connecticut, prepared by Wright Pierce, dated 1/7/26, was posted in the town clerk's office on January 14th, 2026. There was a revision to that map dated February 2nd, 2026, and this was posted in the town clerk's office on the same day. The map was revised by the applicant to show the proper zoning for 67 Cook Drive and 8 Fielding Drive. The applicant mailed a notice of public hearing to the abutters on February 5th, 2026 via a certificate of mailing, copies of which were provided to our office on February 9th, 2026. The public hearing was noticed in the day on February 11th and 18th as required. Due to the town hall being closed on February 24th, the scheduled public hearing could not be held. Therefore, an additional notice of public hearing for today, March 24th, was sent to the day on February 25th, and that was published on March 11th and 18th. The same was sent to the applicant on February 26th. The applicant provided copies of the notice of public hearing for March 24th to the abutters and a letter dated February 26th sent via certified mail on March 3rd. And copies of the letters were received on our, in our office on March 11th. We received comments from the police department, and they had no comments on this change. We did refer this out to DEEP. There had been some changes in the coastal area management requirements, and it wasn't clear if they needed to see all zone changes. So to be safe, we sent this out to them, and they responded, because the parcel lies outside the coastal boundary, the district lacks jurisdiction and therefore offers no comments on this proposal. Building department stated the building official has no adverse comments for this proposal. Public Works commented that they have no comments on this zone change. Staff did speak with attorney Rich Cody on January 13th, 2026 regarding this application. He reviewed the government zoning section ZR14 and the R20 section 9 and our GIS. He did not have any concerns with this request to change it to government. We did not receive any comments from the assessor or the fire marshal's office. And the applicant is here this evening to do their presentation.
Okay. Before we, any questions for staff?
Everyone's familiar with the location.
Yes, right here.
Very good. Yes, sir.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Barry Parfit, professional engineer with Wright Pierce, and on we'll be discussing the application for this zone change for 50 Cook Drive. 50 Cook Drive is located, is it a quarter acre property located off of Cook Drive and is accessed through easements to access to the property. And it is owned by the town of Mottville, and the property is bounded to the north and east by land owned by K2 Towers, the third LLC, and to the south by land owned by Vizion Enterprises, and to the west by land owned by Karen Kingsborough. On behalf of the town, we are submitting this application to change the current zoning from R20 zoning district to the government zoning district for water utility purposes. We found that since the town does not intend to use this property for residential use, that the government zoning classification is a more appropriate classification based on the zoning in section 14 of the zoning regulations. The tank was completed. 530,000 gallon tank was completed last year. Is online and in service. And so, with this application, we are applying for the zone change. And with that. Concludes my portion of the presentation, my initial presentation.
Very good. Commission members, any questions for the applicant's engineer? Okay.
Not yet.
All right. We will go to the public. Public hearing. Comments from the public should be addressing this application and this application only. Anyone like to speak in favor of this zone change application? Would anyone like to speak in opposition? Anyone like to speak in favor? Anyone like to speak in opposition? Last call. Anyone wishing to speak in favor of the zone change application? Anyone wishing to speak in opposition? Okay, hearing none. Entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved. Second.
Well, we have a motion and a second from Commissioner Terry. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Public hearing's closed. We will move on to agenda item 6B, which is discussion and decision of 26ZC 1-50 Cook Drive 099-009-001, which is the zone change from R20 to government. Town of Montville, the owner, the applicant Barry Parfit, PE, with Wright Pierce on behalf of the WPCA. Okay. Hearing no questions from the commission or for staff and the applicant, there's a motion in your package. Commissioner Terry?
I make a motion to approve application 26ZC1 with the following findings. Reasons for approval and effective date of April 13th, 2026. The government use as a government utility use per zoning regulation section 14-2-1. Historic use of the property has been government utility, making a non-conforming lot R-20 a conforming lot government, as there is no minimum lot size and no frontage requirement. The application is consistent with the existing and future land use maps in the town of Montville POCD. The zoning map amendment will not conflict with or undermine the town's comprehensive plan or otherwise compromise orderly development objectives.
We have a motion.
Motion.
Second it.
Second by Commissioner Desjardins. And we'll have a roll call vote, Commissioner.
Okay. Commissioner Longton, he's absent. Commissioner Terry?
Favor.
Yes. Commissioner Gillette?
Favor.
Yes. Commissioner Pike?
Favor.
Commissioner Jarn, yes. Absent. Commissioner Koblick?
In favor.
Commissioner Summers?
In favor.
Commissioner Piniaz?
In favor. And Commissioner Myers?
Myers.
Favor.
Thank you very much. Okay. Zone change approved. We're going to move on to agenda item 7 under old business 7A.
Connecticut General Statute 824 review for the discontinuance and the sale of PTA Lane. This is continued from 3/11/26 special meeting. And staff.
Mentioned the developer would be present tonight at this meeting to provide a presentation of their request and some more of the details to help you make an informed decision. For context, 824 referrals are not new to the commission. This is regarding the consistency or lack of consistency in conservation and development. The request was initiated by Montville One LLC to the mayor in February. The mayor then forwarded the formal request to us. Staff had then, leading up to that, anticipated that this request would be coming forward and had been doing some initial due diligence so we can advise the town council as it relates to possible impacts or lack thereof of the discontinuance on infrastructure nearby, and particularly the Mohegan Elementary School. So you'll see in this report there's a number of considerations for town council to review when that time comes to them. Our traffic engineer, Kermit Hugh, was brought on through CLA Engineers, our on-call town engineer, to help us evaluate potential circulation impacts with the closure of PTA Lane. He is here present tonight and will say a few words in a moment and is, you know, here to answer questions. Discontinuing PTA Lane in this case, in some instances, when a roadway is abandoned, the roadway is reverted back to the abutting property owners up to the center line of the road. In this case, PTA Lane has been part of 87 PTA Lane. 87 PTA Lane was owned by the town. It was sold to Montville One LLC a couple of years back, I believe. Because PTA Lane was part of that lot, had always been, it would then, if through any discontinuance, it would revert back to the owner of 87 PTA Lane. Developer's attorney has done this review on a title. Our town attorney has done this review with their attorney as well and concurs on that. Losing my train of thought here. As part of this, we had also reviewed with all the staff members, fire, PD, utilities as well. That's in the report. I'll go through some of the details of that later after the developer does their presentation. But following your recommendation, or I should say your decision of an approval or disapproval, this will go back to town council. If you the commission finds this consistent and issues an approval for a report, town council would then move forward through their process, which would likely include a public hearing and their vote for, if they were to decide to approve, would be through a simple majority. If you tonight find that this is inconsistent and you issue a disapproval for a report, that would require a supermajority vote on behalf of the town council. So your disapproval doesn't necessarily mean that the discontinuance and sale wouldn't occur. But it's just letting them know that it's not consistent with the plan of development. Okay. We had reviewed the plan. In the report, there are maps and graphics that shows the limits of the development area. And the development team will present that. There's an exhibit which describes where PTA Lane is located, legal description, which was provided by CLA engineers on that map. And there's also the future land use map for this area. And on this map, in represents the job investment area, and the gold represents the housing investment areas. And I apologize, I thought I had labeled the PTA Lane here, but hopefully you can decipher where it's located. About an inch below where it says 2A on the enlargement. So the development as described by Mottville One LLC is that it is a large retail development. So presumably it's about job creation and would be consistent with how it's described as being commercial, light industrial mixed use, or municipal uses. So it would fit into the POCD requirements there. So with that, I will...
Dennis, before we go to the presentation, I would just like to make a couple notes
sure.
to the commission. So this is not a public hearing, and there will be no public comment taken this evening, okay? You know, this is our role to determine if the proposal is consistent with the plan of conservation and development. So keep that in mind, okay? And again, Dennis, I think, laid the groundwork for whether or not the commission determines, you know, it's appropriate. So all of those things should be part of your decision-making this evening. Everybody clear on that? Okay, very good. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, thank
just
you
to make
very
sure
much.
We're all on the correct page.
Of course. Thank you. Good evening, members of the commission. For the record, my name is Kevin Soley. I'm a licensed professional engineer in the state of Connecticut with Soley Engineering. Office is located at 501 Main Street in Monroe. I'm here tonight on behalf of Mottville One LLC, a property owner of 87 PTA Lane and the proposed developer. With me here also is Nicoletto, representing Mottville One LLC. last year, our client, Dominic Carpionato, who is a primary developer from Mottville LLC, he did purchase 87 PTA Lane, which is immediately adjacent to and fronts along the PTA Lane right-of-way in front of Mohegan School. Over the years, I have been fortunate to work with this developer for a number of years now, and collectively and independently, we have successfully completed multiple millions of square feet of commercial developments, large-scale shopping centers, retail developments, things of that nature for a number of national tenants, large and small. So we certainly have the collective experience that can help facilitate a project like this and a significant investment that this represents.
May I interrupt, Kevin? There are some examples behind you up on the screen. I know it's kind of an odd layout for the presentation. But.
Yeah, I apologize. Sometimes there's multiple screens. But yes, I do have a presentation, and it's up on the screen. So we've been successful both independently and working together, working on several projects similar to this that would be proposed here. And I want to say that this is really one of the first steps. There would be multiple subsequent steps that would come along after if this commission supported this A24 referral. But as I mentioned, 87 PTA Lane was purchased by Mottville One LLC last year. And you can see, if there's a laser on here, I can't really point to a laser, but obviously Norwich New London Turnpike runs north-south along the left side of the screen. Mohegan School is towards the rear. Golden Road, which is to the north, which is the primary entrance to Mohegan, and then PTA Lane is kind of in the middle of the screen, directly above 87 PTA Lane there, and does provide a secondary means of access and egress to Mohegan School. Now, as the planner indicated, there have been some extensive studies in support of this. There were a number of traffic studies prepared, which showed that, you know, how the operations work within the school. We have also done some extensive studying on how operations work in Mohegan School. And here's just another map, which kind of shows the overall development area that would be part of this project, assuming if this commission and the town council was supportive of abandoning and selling of this right of way. So to here, again, Norwich New London Turnpike is on the left-hand side, Golden Road to the north, and the Mohegan School to the east, to the right of the page. So one of the things we've been doing is working with staff and working with the potential development potential for this property. We know we have done some additional analysis of Mohegan School, how it operates, and as identified in the staff report and some of the recommendations provided by consultants engaged by the town, you know, there are a number of things that we can do, and this would actually be the impetus and the driver to create a number of significant improvements, not only along the Norwich New London corridor. There could be improvements proposed to the intersection of Golden Road and that access to Mohegan School. Additionally, in some of the materials in your packet, there's some discussion regarding additional improvements and upgrades that could happen to the school itself, increased efficiency with bus circulation, parent-teacher drop-off, and additionally the construction of a new playground playscape area for that, which would all be part of our overall project, one of the subsequent steps to this initial action. So with that, you know, we do believe, as the planner indicated, this is in conformance with the POCD, and we think this really opens up a unique opportunity for significant investment in this part of Montville and can really be a driver to create some pretty considerable and significant improvements, also focus on job creation in accordance with the POCD recommendations. And we believe we're the development team to do it, with our proven track record of completing similar projects, working in, you know, in step with communities to ensure that we're able to create very positive, impactful projects throughout the towns that we work in. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or hand it back to Dennis.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dennis.
Mr. Hugh, would you like to say a few words, please?
Good evening, Mr. Commission, members of the... good evening, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Members of the Commission, for the record, my name is Kermit Hua. I'm a registered professional engineer in Connecticut. I was asked by the town to review the traffic impact of discontinuing PTA lane in broad strokes, if you will. When I say broad stroke, because we don't have any details of the coming development. Specifically, I looked at two intersections. One is Route 32 and Golden Road. The other is Route 32 and PTA lane. And the impact to the school, especially as a result of this continuing PTA lane. So the time period I reviewed were a weekday morning and weekday afternoon peak hours. Because we don't have the exact scope of the development, and there are other development in the area, including the 200-unit residential to the south and other gas station development to the north on Route 32. I assumed that all these three development combined will add 100 northbound traffic, 100 northbound vehicles, and 100 southbound vehicles to Route 32 during each of the weekday morning and weekday afternoon peak hours. So that were the assumptions of the study. The way I will briefly, you know, go through how the Mohegan School currently operates. During pickup and drop-off, most of the parents, there are three parts. Some parents park in the parking lot, then walk the kids to the school. Some parked, you know, line up in front of the school, then drop off the kids and pick up the kids. Also, there are a large number of parents. They enter from Golden Road, then they park on the west side, if you will, on the on-site roadway that's parallel with Route 32, facing south. When they are done with pickup and drop-off, they continuing going, make a right turn onto PTA Lane to exit onto Route 32. Now, after we close, discontinuing PTA Lane to the school traffic, one of the recommendation I'm proposing is have a turnaround, you know, at the end of that where the PTA Lane closed. So those people going southbound, they can turn around, going back to Golden Road, then turn onto Route 32. That's one of the recommendation. The second recommendation is because we now have only one access option as opposed to what primary access option as opposed to two options, there will be some traffic delays as a result, especially during the weekday afternoon peak hour for people making left turn from Golden Road onto Route 32. So that second recommendation I'm proposing is adding a left turn pocket at that intersection of Golden Road and Route 32. Associated with that, obviously, we need to have some revisions of the existing signal operation at that intersection. So that's the two improvements from this effort. So overall, you know, with these improvements in place, it is my professional opinion the school traffic will still work, and you know, with some delays, but acceptable level of delays. When I say acceptable, you know, in traffic terms, you know, about level of service D or better during peak hours. So nothing extraordinary. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Any questions from the commission?
If I can just maybe briefly add, I think it's important to mention that the developer, if the time comes, would need to do a full detailed traffic study, both for supporting future land use applications to this commission, but I would anticipate that this would also require, at minimum, it would require encroachment permits to state of Connecticut, thus requiring an analysis for the signals, but will likely require a permit from OSTA, Office of the State Traffic Authority, as well. So there will be a highly detailed traffic study that would be done to ensure that the school functions, everything functions correctly, and it would be reviewed by our traffic engineer at the time as well. So I just wanted to mention that as well. So.
Okay, very good. Any questions regarding traffic? Go ahead.
I do.
Commissioner Pike.
So I'm curious. You're aware that there's a time frame that children are allowed to be on buses. You are aware of that, right? Maximum 1 hour. You're aware of that? Okay. Second thing is, you talked about putting a third lane in.
So on the westbound approach of Golden Road, adding a third lane. You know, one lane in currently, one lane in, one lane out. I'm adding a left turn pocket for people going west, make a left turn going south on Route 32.
So visually in my head, I'm looking at McDonald's and a house. I'm trying to understand how you expand the road.
Yes, that's a question. That's to be determined. And also there's a great difference between current road and McDonald's. So most likely, if even we have the right of way, maybe there will be some kind of a retaining wall, you know. Just make sure the McDonald's parking lot still works.
Right, so the point I'm making is that the road is a critical piece of this development, am I correct?
That's correct.
If you cannot get that width necessary to suffice the state of Connecticut, am I correct?
Correct. Again, Kevin Soley for the record.
Right.
Yes, that's correct. So as part of this and as part of our preliminary analysis, yes, Kermit's recommendations to widen Golden to provide that left turn lane would be an appropriate mitigation measure here. And as Dennis indicated, yes, this project would require, you know, detailed, comprehensive analysis and review by both your town engineer, Mr. Hua, and also the Department of Transportation. So, yes, so as part of that, all that obligation to secure that right-of-way, to perform that widening, to improve those signal operations, that would all be part of a subsequent site plan application, you know, assuming this first step is received positively.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's it, Mr. Chair.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Terry? You're starting with me. I really don't have any questions.
Mickey, any questions?
The one thing I did see that had a little concern was 6.8 and page 15, the displacement of housing. Relocating assistance plan for, I'm assuming, purchasing somebody's property.
I was going to go through all of those items in a little bit, but that is one that, you know, if there is and there will be displacement of residents in the mobile home park, that would need to be taken care of. And that's, you know, one of the things that we want to make sure we bring to town council's attention. We want to be cognizant that they have the appropriate amount of time and they're provided the resources, both financially as well as technically, in order to find appropriate quality housing for them. And that kind of preempts the considerations that will go forward. They'll need to be in negotiations with a closing for this to occur with the developer. So it would be staff's recommendation to council that these would be items that would be connected to those negotiations as well.
So no more mobile homes. That would be.
We anticipate, as the map is showing, that area would be taken up as
part of the development.
And if they don't want to move?
That's up to the developer. I mean, the
developer would own the property.
That becomes their legal. Yeah. Their
it's not.
Legal
it's
matter.
Not an eminent domain case where they're being
thrown out of their trailer.
Yeah, I mean,
correct.
That's their legal responsibility.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, in my opinion, state that the town can just wash your hands of it. We still, I think, have an obligation to ensure that it happens appropriately and timely.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm going to raise my concern I raised last time with, because you mentioned adding a left lane turning out, but traffic going north on 32 to make a right-hand turn on Golden Road, even with a small vehicle, is very difficult. How is that going to accommodate buses without taking land?
I'm going to answer that, Commissioner Summers, because this is such a high level with a lot of unknowns and not even knowing the square footage and the number of parking, so they can't determine the exact trips. You know, that might require a fourth lane, all said and done, at Golden. So we just don't know yet. But if the developer can't get whatever it is that needs to be done to meet the requirements of Vista and this commission at site plan review, they won't get an approval.
And then the road would revert back to the town?
No, so the way I have this suggested and recommended to council is that the discontinuance wouldn't take place until much later on in the process, after construction, prior to building permits, et cetera. So they'd have to have all of their permits in place and have assurances to protect that things will work and operate. There's also, we would need a detailed phasing plan to ensure appropriate and safe access in and out of the school property during construction. So that's going to have to be looked at very, very closely. So all of those timings and sequencing of events will have to fall in place, and that's what the developer's engineer is going to have to come forward with at the appropriate time, and will certainly be part of that review process.
Okay, thank you.
So essentially contingent upon final approvals. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Commissioner Kobluk, any questions?
No, sir.
Mr. Myers?
Nope.
Mr. Desjardins?
I was wondering right here.
About this piece right here. They're trying to join there just exactly. Right here.
That's
Moline School. Yeah, I know that. That's Moline School. That's not part of it.
It's not part of the development.
Yeah.
That they're indicating that is the area that would require some improvements on the school property that would be done by the developer in order to ensure the circulation is works appropriately to meet the needs of the school.
Yeah, like the turnaround, whatever, right?
It'd be, there might be a turnaround. That's the
emergency access to the school.
Yeah, and that's, I suspect, is very schematic, and I think that's a good segue into some of the due diligence that we did. We've met with the school on a couple of occasions to back in early part of the wintertime to review this with them. We met with the superintendent and the principal, and we've met with the principal. So they've provided opportunity to provide comment and review our recommendations. Last week, I was at the Board of Ed meeting on the 17th and presented the process and what's coming forth. The superintendent did provide a letter to you outlining some of the questions and concerns that they had. They wanted to make sure that was addressed, and that is also in the considerations listed in item 6 here of the report. So I could take a moment, Mr. Chairman, if you think right now would be a good time, I can just do the highlights of my
yep.
section.
Go right ahead.
The first one, while it's at the end, Commissioner Gillette brought it up on the housing. So we want to make sure that any displacement of residents is addressed appropriately. The effect, 6.1, the effect of discontinuance upon abutting properties, particularly in this case, 73 PTA Lane would become a little locked parcel and wouldn't have access, but in consultation with our town attorney, because this is an action by this commission, by town council, that would just require a variance. So we're suggesting that either the developer does that or the landowner, but I would think that would be the developer. The discontinuance on item 6.2, as I had mentioned, nobody can hear me, I'm told. Is that better?
A little bit, not much. It doesn't... The system doesn't do a great job of...
So the timing of the discontinuance of the off-site improvements, we touched upon that. There need to be a sequence and a phasing to ensure the operations of the school are insured, and then the town clerk filing as well when that would occur. And then the permanent school operations, as we had mentioned, maintaining emergency access, security and screening in the back along the property to ensure that people can't just cross over the property line for safety, relocating the playscape from the front where it exists currently to the back where they've identified it on the plan in the circulation. 6.4, traffic and public infrastructure, full detailed traffic analysis, and then that would look at everything from Golden Road, Route 32 corridor, the intersection where PTA lane is now. They'll have to accommodate all the turning lanes that they would be required. There is some utilities in PTA lane now, but also to support future development, let's just per se that the school was to close down at some point and be reverted to another use for an adaptive reuse, ensuring that we have a utility corridor to serve that and other properties in the back. Route 32 as a whole, that's part of the transportation plan or the traffic analysis that would need to be done. Again, that'll go through a lot of scrutiny with OSTA. 6.6, regulatory compliance, making sure that 73 PTA Lane gets the necessary variance that would be required. We would like to see that access to other parcels along Route 32 that either may have access, possible access off of PTA Lane now, or that has access off of 32, but may be able to now access it from the back in this development, and we can maybe do some access management from a safety standpoint, but also allow other properties that are nearby to achieve their best use as well. Zone changes are some that will likely need to happen to just for cleanliness, even though we're in the OZ zone. And then 6.7, the Route 32 corridor, PTA Lane, and north of Route 2A, the state is looking at the Pequot Bridge for expansion. We've met with them. They are going to be evaluating the interchange nearby at Route 2A and 32. I think the it would behoove the town to engage the Regional Council of Governments and state through this process, and at no way to slow up any progress of this project if it was to move forward, but to make sure that if there's improvements that the town, that the state needs to take or do it now from a safety standpoint or in the future, that that work is coordinated with any off-site work on Route 32. Last thing I'd hate to see is Route 32 improvements happen. You know, it's going on for a year or two to support this development. It sits there idle, everything's done, and then the state comes back 2 years later and tears everything up, and everybody's got to go through an entire construction process again. Yeah. So I'm suggesting that there's some coordination with our state leadership to see if there's anything that can be done to ensure that. And this is a gateway, and if there's a way that the state can assist us in enhancing that gateway from a placemaking streetscape standpoint. Again, that's nothing related to suggesting that the developer would be required to do that, but that, you know, it's a recommendation to council and leadership, and then also, you know, our, you know, staff would need to be part of that process too. And then I mentioned the displacement of housing, and then the report concludes with the draft motions either for an approval or disapproval.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Any questions for Dennis?
Yes.
Fire away, Mr. Pike.
So there's an assumption here that Golden Road is not going to be an issue by the state, but we don't, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to say. But the developer's whole project rests on that Golden Road the way I see it. Am I correct? Here's my concern. If we decide to do the discontinuance of PTA Lane, the developer cannot get that road squared away with the state. Now what happens to PTA Lane? The developer owns it. What happens to the school? Now we don't have a back exit. What happens?
What I had mentioned to Commissioner Pike, okay, is
I just want to make sure I understand that correctly.
No. What will happen in the sequence is that PTA Lane wouldn't formally be discontinued until after all of the approvals are in place or some point thereafter. So they would know, and the town would know and have some assurance that Golden and Route 32 is operational, can serve the neighborhood, the businesses, and the school. So that discontinuance wouldn't happen until down the road.
That's in writing? That will be in writing.
Well, that's in here.
No, I just want to make sure we're clear on it.
And that's why it's a consideration to the council. And part of your report, that these are certain things that need to be considered.
These are contingent upon those approvals, or title doesn't transfer.
Yeah. I just want to make sure it's real clear what I'm voting on.
And it's also just making sure the phasing works so the school operations aren't interrupted. From efficiency standpoint, your comment about children not being on the bus for more than an hour, et cetera. So,
well, speaking for the board, I could tell you they appreciate the developer meeting, you know, some needs that the school would need, and we do appreciate that. So thank you.
No, we do have a school that's 67 years old. It's an old school. I do think in the next 10 years we probably will build a new elementary school. And I definitely don't want to chase away a development for a 67-year-old school if we can make it work. The other thing that concerns me a little is the discontinuance of the road isn't a town council vote. It goes to the people in Montville at a town meeting. Everybody in Montville will be able to vote on that. So, you know, we're not relying on seven people. We're relying on all the taxpayers in Montville to decide yes or no. Do we want to discontinue the road? So that could be another river.
Okay. I don't know the answer to that question, but
no,
I believe.
No one does. But.
Well, we'll find out at board meeting.
Okay.
Nikki.
Commissioner Gillette, any
questions
for staff? John?
Nope.
Mark? Josh? Joe?
Nope. I'm good.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Hearing no more questions, we have a draft motion for approval.
Disapproval?
Ms. Terry?
The following motion is suggested for an approval. I make a motion to forward a report of approval to the Town Council in accordance with Connecticut General Statute 8-24 for the discontinuance of PTA Lane as PTA as requested by Mayor Leonard Bunnell and Finance Director Julie Chapman, and described in correspondence from Montville One LLC, dated February 9th, 2026. And as PTA Lane is so described upon the map titled Compilation Plan 87, PTA Lane, with note legal description PTA Lane, dated January 20, 2025, with revision date January 8, 2026. And find that such discontinuance is consistent with the 2022 Plan of Conservation and Development, and to include in the report the recommendations listed in the staff report prepared by Dennis Godere, Director of Land Use and Development, dated March 20, 2026.
Okay. I'll second that motion.
We have a motion. We have a second by Commissioner Pike. We need a roll call vote.
Okay. Commissioner Lockton? Absent. Commissioner Terry?
Favor.
Commissioner Gillette?
Against.
Commissioner Pike?
Favor.
Commissioner Ryan? Yes. Commissioner Myers?
Favor.
Commissioner Kovalik?
In favor.
Commissioner Summers?
Favor.
And that's it. Yep, sure, but here.
Yep, remember me?
Oh, yeah. Commissioner Peeney, yes.
In favor.
Okay.
Approved. Recommendation to the town council. What, pardon me? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1.
7, 1.
You got it. Almost had to take off my shoes to count that. Okay, thank you. All right. Moving on. Let me check my numbers. Still under old business, item 7B, 26, Site 1-245, Route 32, 070-010-000, modification of modified site plan for 22-unit condominium development. The applicant is John Iwanu. The owner is Wilton Holdings, LLC. I understand that staff is not have final comments from everybody back on this. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. We have it. We need a motion to continue this. Do we have a presentation this evening?
No. Applicant is going to wait until the April 28th meeting to give you a presentation.
Okay, that's very good. Okay, so I'll entertain a motion to continue this item to the April 28th meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Right? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay. Item is continued, Meredith. Okay, 7C, 25 sub 7 and 25 SP1-47, Sharp Hill Road, 023-063-000, is a 23 lot re-subdivision. The owner is R&N Holding Company, LLC. It was approved with the conditions on 11-18-25. They have a request for a 90-day extension of time to file the Mylar plans to June 4th, 2026. Entertain a motion to
so moved.
Give them a extension.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Very good. They have a 90-day extension. 7D, 25 sub 4-257, Chesterfield Road, 029-066-001. The four-lot re-subdivision. The owner is Zachary Cash. The applicant is Michael Desitels. And this is approved with conditions on 9/23/25, and they have a request for a 90-day extension of time to file the Mylar plans to July 8th, 2026. It's been a rough winter.
So moved.
Second.
I have July. I have the July 8th here. You have the July 9th there. Let's go with the 9th. Can we go with the 9th? Or is that
this
beyond the 90
the
days?
Ninth, that's beyond the 90 days.
Okay, so it's got to be the 8th.
The 8th, okay.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yep, thanks for pointing that out.
July, okay.
All right, entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? We have an extension. Okay, we have 25-6-71 Moxley Road, 017-012-000. It's a two-lot re-subdivision, the owner being Walter Wainwright Jr. The applicant is Walter Wainwright Jr. It's been approved with conditions on 9/23/25, and Mr. Wainwright would like a request or is requesting a 90-day extension of time to file Mylar plans to July 8th, 2026.
Motion.
Second.
Okay, motion and second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Okay, Mr. Wainwright has an extension as well. Agenda item 8, new business. 8A. 26ZC2. It's a text amendment to add new sections as follows.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah.
Text amendment to add new sections as follows. 1.3, new definition. Architectural facade element, blank wall, fenestrations, architectural vegetation, deciduous tree or shrub, desire line. Evergreen tree or shrub, ground cover vegetation, invasive plants, landscape or landscaped, landscaped end island, landscaped intermediate island, landscaped median island, large deciduous tree, large evergreen tree, medium deciduous tree, medium evergreen tree, small deciduous tree, small evergreen tree, non-invasive native adaptive plant material, shade tree, street tree, BUG, bug, foot candle, full cutoff, glare, light, light trespass, the deer, it's a new one for me, photometric plant, security lighting, access drive, drive aisle, parking area, parking row, parking stall, amend section 18, add new section, 18B-0, landscape and site design standards, section 18C.0, lighting standards, section 18D.0, siting of necessary exterior appurtenances at section 18E.0, blank wall and use of fenestrations. The applicant is the Town of Montville Planning and Zoning Commission. And we must...
Public hearing.
The motion to accept an application and set a public hearing for April 8th, 2026.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on that?
What is in a deer, Dennis?
Sorry if I chopped up a couple
N-A-D-I-R,
of them.
N-A-D-I-R, do you know?
It's the point from the
golf
course straight down to the mountain.
Okay.
Oh.
The reference point.
Lighting concept. Okay, which we've discussed in past conversations. So we'll make a note of that. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
You said August 8th?
Public hearing for April 8th, 2026.
Next month.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Public hearing set April 8th, 2026.
All right. Okay.
Okay. You all right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You need a breath?
Nope.
You need a break?
Negative.
Okay. I think we're still in number 8. We are. 8B. So we have All of Us at North, LLC. This is a pre-application review for numerous parcels along Massapequa Side Road and parcels on Route 32. Mm-hmm. Advisory letter to CMDA regarding proposed development. Blah, blah, blah. So this is an informal presentation by the representatives of All of Us at North regarding a large-scale development concept in the vicinity of Massapequa Side Road and Route 32. Would you like me to carry on, or are we ready to?
Could you handle it?
I would love that.
Yeah.
Come on, Bill.
You don't want to read.
You're on the payroll. Take it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis Godere, Director of Land Use and Development, and I will try to speak loud. Last week I issued a report, or an overview, I should say, for context for this presentation. This is an informal dialogue with the possible future applicant. As was mentioned by the chairman, All of Us at North own several parcels along the Massapequa Side Road. There's a map up on the screen, which the development team will explain later, but I also included one in my narrative to you. There has been on and off conversations with town. I think I had a conversation with a couple of members of the development team. It was my first introduction to this about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it was made brought to our attention that at the state level there is a request to obtain funding to support what's contemplated as 600 to 800 residential units back off of Massapequa Side Road, then another 100, 120 units on parcels that front on Route 32. Route 32 has public water and sewer. There is no public water and sewer on Massapequa Side Road. The request is of the state to provide somewhere in the order, the range of $20 to $30 million to extend water and sewer and prepare necessary other roadway improvements along Massapequa Side Road, Derry Hill, out to Route 32. And again, the development team will explain that further. So that was presented to us briefly a few weeks ago. Last Monday, I received a request from the Connecticut Municipal Development Authority's Executive Director, David Corris. You may remember that name. I had talked about perhaps joining them for helping us from an economic development, as an economic development resource and development planning resource. Mr. Corris said that he's been asked to vet this proposal to help the leadership at the state level in Hartford with the determination if the town, what's the town sentiment on this. So it's a big ask in a short period of time. They are, from all indication, the state is seriously considering this request and the funding sources and how that would work. I believe Attorney Sherwood will present that a little bit later. But this commission, through the chair and with staff's assistance, can write a letter stating your feelings on whether or not this is a proposal that warrants investment here in the town, and whether or not it makes good land use sense for the town of Montville. My report to you, identified some what I call them facilitating comments and questions. I'm not going to read all of them, but what is this going to do to the landscape of Massapequa Side Road and what is a predominantly undeveloped area of R 40 and R 80 zone lots? But keep in mind, this is the OZ zone. It does, so the purpose of the Route 32 overlay or the OZ zone is to provide the utmost of flexibility from an economic development. That is like the purpose, almost verbatim, to promote economic development. However, there is not public water and sewer, so that economic development in this area as it currently resides would then revert back to on-site wells and sanitary sewers, assuming that they're feasible for what the use might be. So what would that do to the landscape here? The town has a number of initiatives going on. We just received the grant from the state of Connecticut for our housing plan. Maybe the timing is right for that in understanding this, but as you link the housing plan to the SIF plan, the Revive and Renew 163 and 32, that effort has not contemplated this. While it was in the study area, it identified 12 nodes along Route 32 and 163, identified three where the town center is, Palmertown area as well, and that's become the focus. And that'll be talked more about on Thursday night. If you don't recall some of those, but how is that going to impact how we want to see infill and revitalization in our existing commercial centers? There's also at the state whether or not it will pass. There's mixed support. House Bill 151, which states it takes a lot of control away from the local zoning authorities, and it would require any location that has public water and sewer either in place or planned to permit lots down to 5,000 square feet. Just imagine, if this would be something, there would be we would have to allow 5,000 square foot lots here. Might be a good thing, may not be. So this is also a big investment and influx into the town of Montville. It raised the question, and I presented it here. Would it take away future funding? Is this a one-time effort? We've been told that no, it wouldn't be, and that it might be, to the benefit, and it could be. Maybe the state is seeing something that they're willing to invest here for an opportunity, and will continue to be able to invest in that too. But there's a lot of questions that this raises. This could be a fantastic opportunity on one hand. It could be, perhaps it may not be. I professionally don't know what that answer is at this point. That's sort of my preamble. Unless you have questions for me, I'd like to just suggest we turn it over to the applicant, or not the applicant, but to the development team.
Would the treatment plant needed to be upgraded?
Well, that would be another component.
Would the town have to do that?
I would suspect that part of that $20 to $30 million might be that. I know they'll talk about that tonight. They have met with WPCA staff and our town engineer is here as well to answer questions that you might have of him. He was part of that discussion. They are actively looking at all of those and what those impacts are on infrastructure and how to get there as well. That raises the whole host of questions of, there's capacity at the plant for that has to be set aside. There's Rand Whitney we need to think about. There's the Mohegan, the casino that we have to think about that's allocated to. How far can the physical infrastructure of the plant build out? How does that impact not only what's being proposed immediately, but also what could be proposed here? We'll hear that this will open up opportunity for commercial development. Well, how much commercial development can we, one, take on the land, can the market absorb, and can our infrastructure physically handle? So there's a lot of things to consider.
Okay. All right. Keep in mind, this is entirely informal,
yes,
non-binding informational purposes. So unless you have any pertinent questions at the moment, thank you, Dennis. I'd like to.
Josh does.
Oh, go ahead, Josh.
Which of those parcels is still tied up with the California developers?
Yeah,
I think they'll have to talk to answer that.
Pardon?
I think they'll have to answer that when they speak.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I'm Attorney David Sherwood. I represent the proposed developer, All of Us at North, which owns 335 acres of land, as you've heard, on the east side of Route 32, and the property that the All of Us at North owns is shown in the map within the orange lines. There's two pieces which front on Route 32, and then the balance are essentially between Massapequa Side Road and Dairy Hill. To start at the middle, as you'll see, I think, throughout the presentation, any improvements that are required by the proposed housing would be covered by the bonding. That's the intention. So we've been working with the WPCA, and if the project, if you decide the project should proceed, we would continue to work with your public works and town engineer and your planning and zoning staff to make sure that the improvements that are required are covered. With me this evening are Brandon Hanfield, who's a professional engineer. He's going to give you an overview of what we're proposing as far as the housing goes. Jim Erickson, who's also a professional engineer, and he's going to explain briefly what the roadway and water and sewer improvements would constitute if the project proceeds. And Dr. Don Poland, who has prepared a fiscal impact analysis and would and is prepared to answer questions relating to that. Currently, as I'm sure you know, the road system in the area is not suitable for this density of development, and there's no public water or sewer available, and any multifamily housing development or significant commercial development would require improvement of the roadway and public water and sewer. We're here to ask for your support for the public improvements which would be required for us to proceed with our development. The we started with the state of Connecticut because the infrastructure cost associated with improving the road and bringing in water and sewer would basically be beyond the ability of the developer to incorporate into the project. So without state help, without the funding for the infrastructure, the project couldn't proceed. So we started with the state. The state is, as I'm sure you know, interested in promoting housing development in Connecticut. There's a severe shortage of housing, particularly affordable housing. And so working with both the state and at least preliminarily with the mayor, we have developed a process for obtaining the required funding. And the way we see it at present and the way we hope to proceed is that the state would issue a bond which would cover the proposed improvements, and that bond would be administered by the town. And what would be required would be, first of all, a recommendation from you, an Section 824 recommendation from you with respect to the improvements that would be proposed. And then it would require approval by your the sewer and water installation would require approval by your WPCA. And any wetlands activity would have to be, in connection with the public improvements, would have to be approved by your Inland Wetlands and Water Course Agency before any of this could proceed. Now, in addition to the general need to provide more housing in Connecticut, there's also a particularly pressing need for additional housing in this part of Connecticut, in southeastern Connecticut, due to the recent contract, which was awarded to Electric Boat to build the Columbia-class ballistic missile submarine. It's a very, very large contract, and Electric Boat anticipates that it will be hiring 8,000 workers in 2026, and I think about 5,000 of those will be employed in Groton. So there will be a large influx of engineers, technicians, shipbuilders to the area. I don't think it'll, I'm sure that the area will, that the workers in the area will fill some of those jobs, but I think we can anticipate that there will be a significant increase in the need for housing. This was the subject of an article in the Hartford Current this past Sunday, and according to the Current, EB's announcement was warmly received, but, quote, there was concern whether Eastern Connecticut and Rhode Island, in particular regional housing stocks and transportation services, can keep up with the shipyard's explosive growth. So there's obviously a concern about the adequacy of housing. The Director of Public Relations and Community Engagement at the Electric Boat Division of General Dynamics wrote the mayor, and the letter is dated today. I will, it's a very brief letter. I'll read it to you, and then I'll submit it as part of the record. It regards the support for the residences on the Thames Residential Housing Development Project in Montville, Connecticut. Dear Mayor Bunnell, I'm writing to express Electric Boat support for the residences on the Thames Housing Development Project that is under consideration in your town. EB is in a period of unprecedented growth and demand for our submarines. Our current hiring plan will double our Groton trade workforce over the next 3 years to over 6,000 employees. This hiring will be an economic catalyst for the region. We support the residences on the Thames project because it will add 868 housing units to the region at a time when new housing opportunities are needed. Sincerely, Sean P. Coyne, Director of Public Relations and Community Engagement.
Staff will enter. Thanks.
So with that, I will ask Mr. Hanfield to describe the housing component of the project.
Thank you and good evening. For the record, my name is Brandon Hanfield. I'm a professional engineer licensed in the state of Connecticut with Yantic River Consultants right down the road in Lebanon. I'll just briefly go through a few exhibits that we have to present to you. The first you have behind you is a parcel map of all the parcels that are owned by all of us at North LLC. You'll see on the left side, for orientation purposes, Route 32 would be to the west or on the left of the page. On the top would be Park Avenue Extension and Driscoll Drive. Mm-hmm. On the right side of your page or to the east would be the Thames River. And on the bottom, you have Dairy Hill Road. Mm-hmm. So all the parcels are outlined in orange and shaded in white. In total, there are 39 parcels and 335 acres. And I don't know if it'll work on a TV. I don't, so I won't be able to point, but that's okay. In terms of the zoning, we have a zoning inset on this sheet. It's a little small, but in general, the top left parcels at the intersection of Route 32 are within the R20 zone. On the bottom left, there's a single parcel located in the R20M. Oh, perfect. Thank you, Mr. Bordier. Be very careful not to shake. So on the bottom left here, you have a parcel that's about 14 acres located in R20-M. In the center here, or everything actually to the right of St. Bernard School, which is here, mm-hmm. is generally within the R120 zone, and all of the parcels in this area are located within the Route 32 overlay. Mm-hmm. All right, so should I click to go to the next sheet? Let's see. Here we go. Sheet number two shows the areas that really have potential development. You will see the central areas are not included. So to the west along Route 32, we have those two parcels there, E1 and E2. Let's see here. to the east along Massapequa Side Road, which is along the Thames River, we have the A and B parcels. And these are a compilation of contiguous parcels. So in some cases, there are numerous individual parcels next to each other. And lastly, you have the central parcels C1 and C2 that are near Park Avenue Extension and Driscoll Drive. In total, these parcels are approximately 150 acres of the 335, so a little under 50% of the land. We are slating for possible development with the balance of that within the center areas here, which are not being slated for any housing development at this time. All right. And one thing I will mention about all these parcels, a lot of the area is vacant and they abut certain other parcels, which over time may have encroached slightly over the boundaries, which is typical for lands, wide open lands. In those instances, should there be encroachments, those can be handled either through easements or conveyance. So not looking to take away anything that exists today. In terms of the existing infrastructure, and we're zoomed pretty far out here, but Route 32, starting on Route 32, the E1 and E2 parcels are on a state road. They have direct frontage on those roads, and they are served by water and sewer currently. So they are slated for housing development, but they fit within a potential where we could go to site plan, bring that in front of the board, and look for site plan approval as well as DOT review of the access driveways. As we get out to the A and B series along Massapequa Side Road, those are the areas that are not served by water and sewer and obviously served by a town road. Those are the areas where we're focusing the need to bring in the water and sewer utilities from Route 32 to serve those areas that are within the overlay zone. So in terms of Massapequa Side Road itself, it's approximately 22 to 24 feet wide. It's a generally a two-lane rural road that intersects with, or actually continues with, onto Fort Shantock Road that goes out to Route 32 to the north. And to the south, Massapequa Side Road continues over to Dairy Hill, which intersects Route 32, or continues down Massapequa Road, which again intersects Route 32 further to the south. Those roads are under consideration for improvement necessary to serve the development. In terms of sewer, there are two existing pump stations that bound the north and south sides of these parcels. So to the north of Dairy Hill Road and Massapequa Side Road where they intersect, there's a single pump station there that has a force main out along Fort Shantock to Route 32. And then to the south and west, there's another pump station that serves the residential developments along Dairy Hill Road and pumps it out to the main and Route 32. There is no water no water services whatsoever until you get pretty close to Route 32. So at the intersection of Fort Shantock and Route 32, there's water there. And then there's a short stub that comes onto Dairy Hill Road from Route 32 to the southeast. So, in general, water will have to be brought to the entire area. To dive into the proposed development itself and what it looks like, again, starting with E1 and E2, we're looking at approximately 100 to 120 units in those two areas there on Route 32. Again, those are served by water and sewer, not really the focus of what we're trying to bring to the commission tonight or present tonight. The A series and A1 are a mix of high-rise, mid-rise, low-rise, and townhouse housing opportunities. So A1, which is to the north and east along the Thames River here, is the first property you get to as you're traveling south on Massapequa Road. It has it nearly has frontage on Thames River. None of these properties actually have frontage due to the railroad, the Central Vermont Railroad that's along. So they're all separated from the river itself. However, A1 does have a historical at-grade crossing over the railroad that goes down to, I believe, a former marina right here.
Yeah, cool,
so A1 does have river access at that at-grade crossing, and that would be a consideration in that development. So A1 is a high-rise with townhomes overlooking the river with approximately 200 units. A2, across the street from A1, would be a low-rise or a mid-rise multifamily option with apartment buildings, also with access off of Massapequa Side Road, looking at approximately 140 units in that area. A3, as we work our way south along Massapequa Side Road, again, would be a high-rise along the river with up to 100 units or approximately 100 units. A4 across the street is here in orange, would be a townhouse development on a flat plateau that exists there with approximately 20 units. And as you work your way further west from A4 up the hill, you get to a low-rise or senior living development, which would have approximately 110 units total. And then as we work our way further south, we get to the B series. So we have B1, which is on the east side of Massapequa, again, along the railroad corridor, would be a mid-rise or high-rise with 100 units. And then B2 across the street would be a smaller townhome development of 30 units. So in total, that gets you to those numbers that are presented of approximately 700 to 800 units total. Let's see here. I think that covers the development here. And again, these centrally located areas, the topography is pretty difficult in that area. There's a number of large wetland systems and water courses that run through them. You can see the outline of the approximate wetlands based on state mapping. So these areas are very difficult to develop, and we're not including them in any projection of housing in that area. And the last two slides I'll go through just to dive in. Again, going back to the E1 and E2, this is 1741 and 1751 Route 32. Again, north is up, Route 32 is on your left. This property here has an existing commercial metal building right underneath the orange proposed building. This would be something where, you know, the site plans that would progress as we go forward with the housing should the infrastructure be installed. These site plans would come to the commission as we move forward, but in this instance, we have the water and sewer available. So we have started the process of preparing those site plans and doing the necessary work to get the details required for your application. So in this case, this development is on 2.5 acres. It is two separate parcels that would be combined. It's within the R20 district, and it would be redeveloped as multifamily with low rise and approximately 40 units. Direct access to Route 32 with internal circulation parking, and then connection to the existing utilities in Route 32. And then the last sheet here is, again, I believe this is E1. This is 1523 Route 32. It's a 14-acre parcel, and based on a review of historical mapping, it did have a number of what looked like residential or agricultural buildings. With access directly off Route 32, you can actually see the remnants of a loop road that used to exist and serve a few houses that have since been demolished. This parcel is within the R20M zoning district. It's proposed to be developed for multifamily with low-rise and townhomes. So we have townhomes up along Route 32 and townhomes as you access the site to the south. And then as you make your way further back into the site, we would have in a multifamily apartment building with 40 to 60 units back there. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Erickson to discuss the water and sewer.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brandon, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. For the record, my name is James Erickson. I'm a licensed professional engineer. I'm the vice president at Haley Ward, Inc., a consulting engineering firm. I work out of our Glastonbury, Connecticut office. but I'm a Basra resident right next door to Montville, so relatively close by. We were retained by all of us at North to do the water and sewer preliminary designs and cost estimates. And we started with several meetings with the town staff, WPCA with Derek Albertson and Ron McDaniel, John Carlson with the DPW town engineer, just to review our project and get available records. And I must say, Mr. Albertson, the superintendent, was very accommodating. You have a very professional staff at WPCA. They got us all sorts of maps, flow records, everything we needed within a day or two, they got it to us. So it was very commendable. The first thing we broached with them is the capacity. Based on the number of units here at build out for the A and B units, we'll have a demand of about 155,000 gallons per day of drinking water. And so we wanted to make sure that the town has that available in their capacities. And based on their water contract with the regional pipeline, there is that capacity that exists. And there's also that capacity at the water pollution control facility. So we can be provided water and we can be treated our wastewater for these flows if it passes through this process. So in general, on the water, I will look at, if you look at the map behind you, I'll try to. So the, let's see, on the left-hand map over here, we'll start with water first. 16-inch main exists in Route 32. There's a short stub onto Fort Chantock Road. And on the south side, there's about 700-800 feet of water main on plateaus, road drive, over here to a hydrant. And we will be connecting on both ends of this system to essentially form a looped water main to serve both our parcels and all the parcels along the way. on the north, we'll be going through Fort Chantock Road, and all the residential properties here are on private wells. There's not public water there, so a benefit would be public water would be available to people who would want to connect to it. And as you continue down, past there underneath the overpass, past Fort Chantock Park itself, we get to our parcels. The A parcel's over in here, and then the B parcel's over in here. These parcels are elevations from elevations 5 to about 90, adequate flow, adequate pressure from this water main to serve these parcels both for domestic flows as well as potential fire flows. The one hiccup in here is there's a high point on Dairy Hill, which the state health code says we need to maintain 25 pounds in our mains at all time, and under certain pumping conditions, we might go below that. So we're showing the addition of a booster pumping station, which should be over, let's see, over here, and then also a pressure reducing valve to knock the pressure back to normal just to get over the top of the hill. So we're having provisions there to get the water to here with adequate flows and pressures. For, as far as sanitary sewers go, existing sewers are in place on Ford Chantock Road up to Driscoll Drive, and there's a manhole at the peak of the hill here. And the A properties, wastewater would be collected in a gravity sewer to a low point and would be pumped up to that sanitary manhole on Driscoll Drive. It would flow by gravity to the existing Massapequa pumping station owned by the town and using the forest main to get it out to Route 32. We'd be increasing the runtime of this pump station, but essentially it's very close. It probably has capacity for us, but we are planning on upgrading this with the WPCA to provide increased capacity to handle our needs as well as theirs and provide upgraded newer facilities. The B parcels are over here. Gravity sewers would flow to a low point on the property, and a pump station would then pump it up through a forest main to the Dairy Hill pump station. Similar to the other pump station, we're increasing the runtime It has capacity for us, but we would be increasing capacity and upgrading the facilities with the WPCA's approval. The third pump station not shown here is on Avery Road because the Massapequa pump station pumps onto 32, and then that flows down to Avery Road pump station, and that one would be impacted as well. So we'll be working with the WPCA to upgrade their facilities to account for our usage. As far as road improvements go, our project team has a traffic consultant doing a traffic study at present. We fully anticipate certain roads needing to be improved and widened, and that will be part of our project. $25 million project is, this will cost between $20 and $25 million to what we estimate to do the water and sewer improvements as well as roadway improvements. And as Attorney Sherwood said, that would be done through a bond through the state of Connecticut. So we've had very good communications with town staff so far, positive responses, and we're looking to work with them as a project moves forward to finalize our designs and to help them improve their facilities along the way. So, thank you very much.
We believe that recommending these infrastructure improvements would lead to the development of urgently needed housing in the area in a zone that, in the overlay zone, which allows obviously residential development. I want to point out that a significant portion of the housing would be affordable because that would be a condition of the bond. At present, we anticipate that 30% would qualify as affordable. According to the Department of Housing, in 2025, Montville had 7,402 housing units, of which 472 units qualified as affordable, which is 6.38%. If this project proceeds, we anticipate that 30% of the proposed 900 plus or minus units would be affordable, which is 270 units, which would bring the total percentage of affordable units in Montville to 8.94, almost 9%. So we ask you to consider this. Please keep in mind that we're obviously not asking for a nod to a development of this size after an hour presentation, but the way the process works, the state is interested in promoting housing. It's tying the funding to the housing. The state obviously wants input from the town of Montville with respect to whether or not this is something that you would consider entertaining. We understand that obviously that there's not going to be a single unit of housing built unless it's approved by this commission. The way I understand the process to work, if the project proceeds, there would be a bond issue, there would be an agreement with the town, and the bond money would be paid out in conjunction with the residential development. So it isn't, I don't think it's a situation where Montville would receive, you know, $25 million, put in the bank, construct the improvements, and then the housing would be done. I think it would be done in conjunction with the development. And obviously, each of these proposed pad sites would be subject to your review. When we met with Mr. Godere, we discussed the zoning possibilities if the project proceeds. One would be to go in for site plan approval under the overlay zone. That's essentially the process at present. Another possibility would be to apply for a text amendment and set up a design development district, which would be a floating zone, so that you would take a look at a master plan for this area, approve the master plan, and then we would go in for individual site plans that were in conformance with the master plan. So the the mechanics of how the development would proceed are really beyond the scope of what we're asking you to consider this evening, but we ask that you understand that we certainly understand that on a project of this size, it's got to be a partnership with both the commission and the staff with respect to how best the project would proceed. So with that, we are happy to answer any questions. Dr. Poland, as I said, is here to answer any questions with respect to fiscal impacts.
Would love to hear from him regarding fiscal impacts and potential tax revenue items along those lines.
Good evening, Chair, members of the Commission. For the record, my name is Don Poland. We've produced a report related to the fiscal impacts, conceptualizing what's conceptualized here or presented to you. On a property tax basis, for our report, mind you, this is a moving target unit-wise. Our report conceptualized 750 units. Higher numbers have been put out here tonight. So our report conceptualized about $3.2 million in real estate taxes. If it were as high as the numbers tonight, that would push up to approximately $4.7 million. There would then be additional taxes for personal property related to motor vehicles. That's approximately another $400,000. And then we also, on the fee side, not tax, but fee side, considered user fees on the WPCA system. And that would add approximately another $240,000 in user fees. That comes to a base total, remember, at 750 units, of approximately $3.8 million in revenues. We also looked at the expenditure side impact to the municipality, which would include both general government services, your town hall and all those services it provides, and then also the Board of Education side of things. On the Board of Education side, I want to make clear that demographics drive enrollments more than housing units do. I know intuitively we all think every housing unit's going to equal a child. But nationally, regionally, statewide, and locally, we are an aging population. Your population is now 42.7 years old. The United States is around 39 years old. Connecticut falls in between there. The older a population is, the fewer children that it produces. In addition, our household structures have changed. That is the fact that there are more single-person and two-person households than there ever were previously. Total households, about 29.6% of total households in Connecticut are single-person. You add in two-person households, and that number goes up to 57% of total households. So between one- and two-person households, there's very low likelihoods of enrollments. Between 2010 and 2020, Montville lost 670 persons under the age of 18 years old. And since 2008, you've lost 800-plus school enrollments. During the same period of time, you added 117 housing units. My point to demonstrate there, you added housing units, you lost enrollments at a far greater rate. It's demographics that are driving enrollments. So on the enrollment side, when we do those projections and we come up with the numbers, essentially we estimate a total of about 136 enrollments into the school system. However, only about 75% and 100 or 103 of those enrollments would be new to district. There are always movements within district into new housing that don't create new enrollments in the school system. We also, going through a method of a marginal cost approach, came up with about a 17% cost in property taxes to fund local government. So in total, we come up with about $1.5 million in expenditures to the community, both on education and general government services. So the net fiscal impact in the end is ultimately about $2.3 million positive from a total of about $3.8 million in revenue. So about $1.5 million goes to actually offsetting expenditures. I want to be clear that this is consistent with dozens of studies of pre-development, post-development impacts that I have done over the course of my career or over the course of the past 18 years. The fact is, with multifamily development, upwards of 50% of the revenue are typically net positive to the community compared to single-family, multifamily, which is dominated by much larger number of bedrooms and therefore more likely to attract family households, which can run either fiscally positive or fiscally negative. So I'll end there and take any other questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions? I have a question for Mr. Jim Erickson. On the water, your estimated water needs for this project were 155,000 gallons a day. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And our capacity allotment for the town of Montville leaves plenty for other development. I don't know what the numbers are exactly.
I don't know the numbers myself, but according to Mr. Albertson, who has those numbers, he felt very quickly in the first meeting that there's adequate capacity that exists today, both water and sewer treatment,
yep,
to serve our project.
Okay. You're aware our water comes from Groton,
yeah,
correct?
Same,
and
same
we have an allotment on that. Okay.
I was a design engineer in Waterford for their portion of that, so
okay.
I was
very
good. Much familiar with that project. It's a great project.
All right. Very good. I think that was it on that. All right. Thanks.
Lise? Thank you.
Whoa. Nope.
Okay.
Joe has one.
Joe,
fire away.
With all of this proposed development, the town needs to really look at staffing. All of this development is going to have a major impact on all the departments. And it's tough to hire people. So I know the mayor and the council really got to look at this and address staffing and take that into consideration.
Well, it'll affect fire and ambulance, I'm sure. That's really going to be affected.
Every department's going to be affected by this, by these developments.
Go ahead.
So, Dennis, I'm reading your proposal here. Number 10, it says in bold letters, no lots will be larger than 5,000 square feet. Subdivided into lots, no larger than 5,000 square feet.
Yeah, that is House Bill 151 that is being contemplated right now in this current session. I'm not on the ground enough to say if it's really gaining traction, but it's still out there. It doesn't seem like it's died yet. There's been public hearings for it. But basically, 5,000 square feet is townhouses, kind of like lining up in zero lot line development. To some degree, that could be what it is. So, but that is exactly what the new legislation is suggesting.
I'm almost inclined. It's the size of a lot at 46 Laurel Drive when I moved here in '94. Probably Mr. Heller would know, or somebody else would know this, but. It sounds small, but it sounds like it's 50 by 100. It's not really that small.
You know, it,
It's not new anymore, but you know, about 20 years ago, there was a movement called New Urbanism, and everybody wanted to build what was old. You know, the quintessential cute villages of Stonington Borough. I mean, that's what a 5,000 square foot lot is. But I was talking to our Route 32 team about this morning, and that the reason they identified what 12 or 13 nodes along Route 32. And the reason they honed in on a couple of them, not just because of resources, but how much do you want to water down your development areas? If you focus too much all over the place, you get just hodgepodge type stuff. What baffles me to some degree, logical, sound planning is sustainable, and it promotes reuse, infill development. And I'm going to give you some examples of why I'm a little bit like questioning the why of this. The village apartments over here, they got approval. The last I knew, we met with the new owners at Echo. They don't have funding to prepare the rest of the drawings. To fund the construction documents, and they'd also need funding for the construction. They did ask money from the state for this past SIF grant round, and I don't believe they got it. I believe, is that 50 units, 60 units, or something like that, right? 57. Oh, the village over in Jerome.
Oh, yeah.
It's another
100. Okay, so 120. So that's 120 units that have an approval for us. They just need funding to build and finish the construction documents, and they can be online, in the very near future with water and sewer right there. The town is looking for elderly housing, and we are exploring from town-owned land, which is right on water and sewer with a private owner of a nearby land. That could easily bring on another couple hundred units right there. The former Duncan site's available. There's some sites over here in our development nodes that are available. Maybe, I don't remember what our team had said, but maybe that's another 100 units right there for land that's available. Could the state be better using that money? And again, it might have to do with the resource, the specific type of funding source and how it's earmarked, but could that just be allocated to assist the town in acquiring property and developing property where there's existing infrastructure in place and that we're looking to redevelop? There's that aspect that I struggle with. There's also the what if, what would happen, with something like this, in the future and not wanting to miss out on an opportunity for the town if there is one here associated with this. There was a mention about the rail line. We have very little access to the river. This is something that and we were asked to draft a letter, and I actually took the liberty of drafting one, a neutral letter. I talk about how DOT has spent time and to study bringing that rail line back up to standards for passenger rail. And there was a recent article or a post that they are moving forward with further studying that. And I believe Norwich is embracing that, and there's a movement in the Norwich area. And one of the rail stations is right up the river at the Mohegan Sun Casino, and then also at the Coast Guard Academy as well. So maybe there's that possibility that if there is housing here and if that rail does happen, maybe that's a great place for it. But also, it could bring people down to electric boat by rail. How long term that is. I see two sides of it.
I have a question for the attorney. So if all the stars align, what's the projected timeline of construction, phasing? How's that pictured? Again, building the infrastructure. Apparently, the state is interested in, you know, putting up funds to take care of that. You know, is all the other financial horsepower in place to build this? You know, it's a former site of a dream there too. That
part of the
fizzled. So, just out of curiosity, is it, explain to me what how you feel on that, or where you stand, or what you know.
The state's interest in providing additional housing is at a very high level and has been for the past year or two. This has been identified as a crisis situation by the legislature. Mm-hmm. So that is, I believe that's what's behind the momentum that this project has gained at the state level. And the state has made it clear that it's prepared, I don't want to say that, the state has made it clear that it's prepared to consider funding the necessary infrastructure at this site if the site provides a significant number of housing units. And the state is obviously encouraging Electric Boat to be successful. It's provided a tremendous number of jobs to the area, tremendous amount of money to the area, and we think that a significant number of Electric Boat employees will end up here if this project proceeds. And I think they're the kind of people that you want as neighbors. They're going to be, obviously, are going to be employed. They're going to be engineers, technicians. They're going to make an investment in the community. So I think that from a big picture point of view, the state is very interested in this. Electric Boat is very interested in this. And the reason I mention that is because it's the way to think about this is not to say, well, the state is prepared to give Montville $23 million for this project. We really don't want that. We don't want the money for this project. We want it for that project. Well, I mean, you can ask the state for money. Towns do that all the time. But this is a completely independent type of financing. It's a bond issue. It's tied to a urgent state interest, and so it's, I don't think it has any negative impact on the money that's available to the town or will be available to the town in the future. And I think that if the state invests $22-23 million in your community and this housing is built, that the chances are very good that the state is going to take a more favorable look at additional money that you need. Obviously, you're going to need a bigger staff. Dr. Poland has indicated that you can anticipate significant net revenue from the project. Now, as far as the developer goes first, one of the requirements that the legislative people have before they will start to process this type of request is financial information about the developer. They want to make sure that if they back the project and issue the bond, that the developer who's responsible for the project has the wherewithal to complete it. And so the developer has submitted his financials to the state, and apparently they're satisfied with what was submitted. The principal is Holly Management, which is a company in Cape Cod. That company has developed hundreds of thousands of square feet of commercial and residential space, so I don't think there's any reasonable question if the project proceeds that the development will be built out. As far as timing goes, it will certainly be developed in phases, and my guess is at a minimum, you're probably looking at a 4 or 5 year build out, but you have to take into account that there's, as I'm sure you will, that there's a processing mm-hmm. time involved, because we're not gonna go in with 15 site plans and ask you to approve them all on one evening, so we'll proceed with the project. So it'll happen over a period of time. My guess is probably 5 to 10 years by the time it's complete, if it proceeds.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a comment.
Go ahead. So I work at Electra Boat. Not that that's really relevant, but it is because I listen to young men and women talk. Mm-hmm. They make $100,000 a piece. I'm just going to throw that out. Let's just say they make $100,000 a piece out of college. They can't buy a house because they don't have the money to put down. Mm-hmm. So it's a real situation. I 100% agree to affordability. Where I disagree with the doctor is these are young people,
yeah.
20s and 30s, who want to have children. These are not senior citizens. These are not people in their 40s. These are young people who are coming here for a career and to raise a family, and I work with them every day. So I would question the amount of children that's going to be used, comes about here in this. His study is completely different than the study that was presented to us at the Board of Ed meeting on the 17th. There's multiple ways to look at school population, but I can just tell you for a real fact, these are young people that want to buy a house, and I applaud the project. I think it really got great teeth if we could pull it off, but there is a population that's younger that's going to have kids.
I'm the father of a couple of that population, so.
Yeah, we want starter homes.
And the principal financing source, so.
Okay. Any other questions from the commission at this point for the presenters?
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, before we move on, because we do need to get back to the state, so I don't know if there's it would be appropriate for the commission to have a discussion on what the sentiment is, and then perhaps through you, if I can support, write a letter to Mr. Forrest on folks' opinion. And they're moving. They're looking to get a response on this.
So, okay.
Tonight?
Mm-hmm. So do they have a day to digest?
Can we read it, think about it?
Yeah.
And send the chairman or?
I mean.
Or not.
It's a large ask.
It is, and that's what a frustration part on my part is that Mr. Sherwood.
Yeah.
Would the do you know when the state needs to hear back from us?
No, I would. I guess I would suggest that you call Mr. Corris and ask him the. He didn't approach us directly. He approached you. But obviously, this is something that they're trying to get funded this session, and there's only, I think, 3 more weeks in the session.
Okay, so we don't meet for another
Do we have a couple days?
Yeah.
I think you have a couple of days. If there is more information that you want, we're going to give you copies of what we presented and a copy of Dr. Poland's study. If there's more information that you want and you want to schedule a special meeting, we're more than happy to return and give you additional information. I apologize for what may look like a last-minute presentation, but apparently I'm not a state-level person. I'm a municipal person, and apparently that's the way things proceed at the state. So, the one thing I understand after my years of land use practice is that nothing happens without your approval. So it seemed to me that maybe we should have appeared before you previously, but as it turned out, I guess the state was not convinced that the project should proceed until relatively recently, but that's why we're here so late.
We'll express the commission's sentiment in short order to Dennis and report.
I mean, if you give them a green light, it's not like I said, we're not going to be out there with the bulldozer tomorrow. I mean,
we understand that, absolutely. There's a lot more to the project.
Things happen.
Yeah. It's just, lot to quite a project to digest.
A lot in one night.
1 hour. Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And this is a short session at the state, and there are timelines. I don't know the dates. but the short session ends at the end of May. They consider proposals, I think, till the end of this month.
All right, so well, go home and stay awake. And
Dennis, I still have a question about the capacity,
yeah.
WPCA capacity. So he said that it would cover. He would.
Well, and as we need to get our hands around that, I don't know if anybody really does, but Mr. Albertson has represented that they understand that what that capacity is. So of that...
like, I would feel comfortable with a report from the WPCA saying, because what if this other project, PTA Lane project, goes online? Say it does. Right? I mean...
There's capacity, what was represented as capacity to do this project, but what's the capacity to do other projects?
Correct. What? Yeah. What's the capacity to do anything else? Sorry. I think that's what we need to find out. And we don't want to be on the hook for having to do it, upgrading it ourselves in the town. So... I don't know. I think we need a question.
Well, the other thing I was thinking about, too, and just on the neighborhood is how is this going to impact the quality of life in the neighborhood? And not just the development, but the long-term potential of what this is going to bring. You know, that's something that I think is in the back of my mind. And that puts a burden on your shoulders to think about, you know, to say to the state, yeah, you know, this makes sound planning, but all the people that live in that area, in that neighborhood, that are now going to have a completely different Massapequa Side Road and Derry Hill Road, and there's water and sewer, and you know, build it, they will come, and, you know, so there's that aspect.
Well, every development does have that impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We now have a 40-story hotel in town that we didn't have either, so, you know. I agree with
you. Yeah.
It's, we got to consider it, but, okay. And again,
that's a good question.
Think about
I
it,
like
get your
that.
Thoughts together, and if we have contingencies that we think need to be addressed. So
I'm
going to
drive around the area tomorrow or whenever. I want to get a feel for it.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we could have a meeting at another time before, right?
Yep.
Once
okay.
we get our collective thoughts together, right?
To pull it together, we can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay.
I have a lot of
moving on. Agenda 8C. That's 26. Site 2, 888, Route 32, 083-005. -000 accessory parking lot. The applicant's Joe Pinnell. The owner is Depot Road Property LLC. We're looking for a motion to accept the application and continue to the April 28th, 2026 meeting.
April 28th.
Motion.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Continue to April 28th. Stacy, zoning matters.
Let's see what's better than this place.
Hope you don't have much.
Yeah, let's see what matters.
Read the report.
No, what matters there?
Just read the report. Talk quick.
Nothing going on.
Yeah.
All's good in month.
All's good.
Like chicken coops and everything else.
Possible.
Oh, here we go.
go easy. Don't get hurt.
Okay. Zoning and Wetlands kind Officer of. For the record. So this report is a little bit more lengthy because we missed our February meeting. So it runs from a period of January 27th, 2026 through March 23rd, 2026. There were a total number of 280 inquiries in the office. Total number of open zoning permits at the beginning of this reporting period were 418. Total number of 57 certificates of zoning compliance were issued. There were two zoning permits closed where certificates of zoning compliance were not necessary. Total number of 23 field inspections were conducted and 26 new zoning permits were issued, leaving a total number of current zoning permits at 385. There are two new zoning enforcement complaints. There are 13 ongoing complaints. We had two closed do have three wetland complaint enforcement actions ongoing. There were none closed, and Wetlands Commission, they currently had 7 applications. 3 have been approved just as of last week. 3 were continued, 1 was withdrawn, and we currently have 1 ZBA application. Just a couple of additional things to point out. Projects that have been approved, 1080 Route 32, the applicant for that site had delivered his as-built for a final inspection. There were some items that were not built in accordance with the approved plans, specifically with reference to the bituminous concrete. They used millings instead. Meredith and I spoke with the town engineer, who felt that this was an acceptable modification, and he felt that this could in fact be approved administratively. So we have gone ahead and accepted this administratively. They have not been issued a substantial certificate of zoning compliance as of yet, because they do still have some pending items that need completion. So once those items are done, I'll do a follow-up inspection and issue that. There was also a 15 by 25 foot concrete loading dock that was installed in a non-patron area. That's going to be utilized by the applicant only for preparations of auctions. And we spoke with the town engineer regarding that, and he felt it was acceptable as long as that was in an area that patrons would not be accessing. So that's that. Property 393 Butler Town Road, a substantial certificate of zoning compliance was issued with reference to that property. There's still a couple of outstanding items that will be completed in the spring pertaining to landscaping and the final layer of pavement. And finally, 2268 to 2284 Route 32, they had some minor modifications to their approved plan. Let's see, during initial site preparations and discussions with Eversource, it was determined that a transformer was required in the northeast corner of the property. So some minor modifications had been proposed in that immediate area to facilitate that installation. There were some minor changes to the elevations on site pertaining to the requirement of additional drain manholes, which Kyle Halbert, who was here, from CLA reviewed and approved. There were some modifications that were required because of the Department of Housing with reference to a limit of work line between DOT work area and on-site work area. And there was finally a modification that was requested by DOT for the relocation of the proposed sidewalk connecting to an existing ramp on-site versus in the state right-of-way. All of these changes were minor in nature, and after review with the town engineer, staff felt it could be approved administratively as well. That's all I have, if anyone has any questions.
Thank you, Stace. Any questions?
None.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Great job.
Number 10, Land Use Director Report.
Oh, all done. Excellent.
Okay. Nice.
Thank you.
I'll take it personally.
Very quick, Dennis, very quick.
I will attempt to describe some of the housing definitions that I fumbled over last meeting, but in your packet there is a document called Review of Proposed Housing Definitions, HB 8002, that was sent out an email last week, but also a hard copy in front of you. So these are associated with the new bill to be in line with what's required for either as of right or the type of housing dwelling units that are now described in the law. I'm going to go through each one and describe them. Please stop me as you might have questions along the way. And this will be related to the next topic I want to talk about as to what zoning districts these will be permitted in as well. So there is a spreadsheet in your handout as well. Yep, the colorful spreadsheet. It's similar to what I had provided at the last meeting. But I had added the proposed residential uses at the bottom of it. But I will focus on that one later. But I want to go through the types of housing on here. So the first definition is the proposed definition. The one that's indented is the existing definition. And then I provided a narrative as to what the change was. Starting with accessory dwelling units, the only change is that we deleted any reference to a minimum size because we can't have minimum size requirement. It can be any size as required by building code.
There's another bill.
Oh, boy. Jesus.
That's dealing with accessory dwelling units, and it has legs. So, which will affect this definition.
We will take it up when that time comes in. Thank you. And we'll have another crack at this after. You know, we're trying to get things a little bit more organized for the July 1 deadline, quote unquote. So that way, at least it somewhat is in line with what's in the new statute. So the next definition is cottage clusters. Cottage clusters, along with some of these other items, are part of a category called transit community middle housing, which is comprised of duplexes, cottage clusters, triplexes, quadplexes, sixplexes, townhomes. Cottage clusters is a new term, a grouping of at least four detached housing units or live-work units per acre that are located around a common area. And here's two examples so you have a visual of what that looks like, perhaps. Kind of cute, you know. They're cottages. Okay? They're smaller scale around a common area to promote social spaces. So this is a new one. Dwelling unit is the next definition that's been modified. I am suggesting utilize just what's straight out of the state statute instead of inventing our own, so we're in line with all the laws that are coming out. It's basically the same thing. Duplex. This is the same as the two-family dwelling unit that we have for our definition, which we also say duplex. I just called it duplex and took out two-family dwelling just to be consistent with everything else in the statute. And there are some examples of what that looks like. If you add another unit to a duplex, if you have three units, that becomes a townhome. Just to give you an example when we get to a townhome.
What did you say if you added a third?
If you added a third unit to a duplex, then you have a townhome.
Okay. Yeah.
That wouldn't be a threeplex or anything like that. That would actually be a townhome. A triplex, we'll get to in a minute, it's a little bit different. Attached single-family flats. These are your traditional apartment buildings, which has one common entrance, and then each unit is accessed via a common hallway. Mm-hmm. Essentially the same thing, slight modification to the to the definition. And there's an example of a couple. It could be two stories, three stories, one story, five, 10 stories. Family, we didn't make any changes to family. Added a term home, which is basically a dwelling unit, and I'll explain why in a moment. When we get to single family home. Live work unit, this is again part of the transit community housing. This is a building or space within a building used for commercial or residential purposes for an individual residing within such building or space. So you live in the same building that you work. Hmm. Kind of open-ended, to be honest with you. little vague. The multifamily housing development, this one I tweaked. I said it's a building or multiple buildings totaling three or more dwelling units on a lot, so it may not just be three dwelling units in one building or more. There might be three dwelling units on a common, you know, that share a common lot, so it might be an association. And this kind of goes into the cottage clusters. So if you have a cottage cluster development of one cluster of four, that would be multifamily development. Seasonal dwelling hasn't changed. Middle housing is new. So this is the definition from the statute, which is a duplex or a triplex or a quadplex, cottage cluster, and townhome. Did I miss six plus? I got to check that. Missed it. Median income, I added that one in because we're going to be getting into affordable housing. So and set aside. So that's all based upon median incomes. So single family home, this is what we currently call single family dwelling. I'm calling it a single family home. This is your traditional single family house on a lot in a 1 acre lot subdivision or a 2 acre lot subdivision. I'm going to fast forward to the next one, which is single family detached dwelling unit, which is essentially a single family home with other single family homes on a common lot.
Hmm.
Or you could have a single family detached dwelling unit on a common lot with a duplex or a triplex or a townhome or other type of multifamily development. But it's to distinguish when we get to the zoning to the table to say that you can have multiple single family detached dwelling units in a development, such as a cluster development in a certain zoning district, but you can't have them within a zoning district such as an R120 or an R80. That would be a single family home. And partly, I guess people have come in and asked, well, I want to put two single family houses, you know, on a lot without having to subdivide it. It's trying to help clarify that as well and to reinforce that you can't do that. But you could do it in some of the other areas where we allow a higher density. And again, I'll get to where we're suggesting that in a moment. And then in that example, you'll see that there's a single-family attached flat building on the left. There's a single-family, then a couple of single-family detached dwelling units nearby. It isn't uncommon for developments to have a very diverse product type to help with sales and absorption. Within a development, and that single-family detached dwelling unit adds to diversity. And this goes into the 5,000 square foot lots that we talked about, where you know it's creating your villages, recreating your Stonington boroughs, if you will, if somebody wants to do that. No change to temporary healthcare structures. Added the definition of transit community middle housing development. Residential building containing not less than two dwelling units, but not more than nine such units, including but not limited to townhouse, duplex, triplex, perfect sixes, and cottage clusters. So that's where some of the other definitions that we had to add. In the triplex, we added the triplex. I think are more common in an urban setting.
Yeah, you see like in Norwich, Norwich, a lot of it's owned by one person. And
a lot of work in Hartford. Hartford has a lot of them. They have a lot of quadplexes and sixplexes as well, or perfect sixes as well. Townhome, I think a townhome's pretty straightforward. Two-story buildings, you got an entrance on the front and an access to the rear as well. But that's the basis of that definition. Garages sometimes are in the front. I think that's more common when people know of a townhome, but they're not always like that. They might have detached garages somewhere else on the property or access from an alley in the back. And then Perfect Sixes is an example. You have one entrance that serves all six units in the building, and it's got one common corridor. And then the quadplex is just a Perfect Six with the top story level. Any questions on the definitions? All right, must be getting late. So,
I really do.
This one is my attempt, and we reviewed this together today as well, to propose where these types of units should be permitted. So, the first half of the table on top are the existing residential uses and where they are allowed. You'll see highlighted in the box in the red are senior housing, active adult, cluster development, adaptive reuse, and manufactured home park. We're not proposing that any of those are touched in this amendment at all. The one that is really impacted the most is the multifamily dwelling. We got rid of that category covered with all the new different housing types. So we've got the single-family detached dwelling unit, the cottage clusters, the duplexes, the triplex, quadplex, perfect six, live-work units, townhomes, and then the attached single-family flats, which are, again, your traditional apartment building. Single-family homes would still be permitted as they are now in all zoning districts up until R20M and then the commercial. Single-family detached dwelling units. Again, this is multiple single-family homes on one lot under common ownership, suggesting that they be permitted in the R20 zone and the R20M. Cottage clusters being allowed in the R20, R20M, and then the C1 and C2. And so cottage clusters all the way down to the townhomes by the housing bill. All of those are required to be allowed as of right in mixed use or commercial developments now. Only up to 9 units. But we're pretty permissive and we don't allow special permits for any type of density. So I'm suggesting that we still keep it as a permitted use. Attached single family flats, your traditional multifamily or townhome or apartment building. Permitted in the R40, R20, R20M, the C1, the C2, in the C2, which is basically we allow multifamily in all those zones now. And then what I'm saying, mixed middle housing or attached with or without single family attached single family flats. That gives the flexibility that you don't have to do just one product type, you can do a mix of all the product types. And then again, R40, R20, 20M, C1, and C2. You'll see a note on the left-hand side says commission. I'm throwing it out there just for consideration. I think what you just saw tonight, 800 units that might be coming down the pike. Right now, other than maybe some tweaks to some bulk standards, it's not that far off from being allowed as of right in the OZ zone. So as of right, if they meet the zoning requirements, then it needs to be approved. Under a special permit, the commission has a lot more discretion to look at certain impacts with consistency of POCD, the off-site improvement, stormwater management. There's a whole list. We have got four criteria, and it's a legislative decision. So if there is something that the commission is not in agreement with or isn't comfortable with and states that on the record, the commission has more discretion for conditioning a site plan versus having just a straight site plan. So I'm throwing it out there for a thought that perhaps at a certain threshold, you might want to consider a special permit. It does require public hearings. It's a little more, a little more time consuming because of that. But it's just something I'm throwing out there. And I just said 25 or 50 or 100 units. Maybe it's 200 units. But maybe you don't even want them. But it's not uncommon to have a certain threshold. And the same thing even on commercial, like over a certain square footage. So if somebody comes in with 100 or 200,000 square foot, you have less discretion than you would with a special permit. Density. You'll see a host of suggested density. Right now for multifamily, we allow 18 units per acre in the R20M. That one I'm actually just, I don't know, 18 units seems like an odd, I don't know if it's an even number, but it's an odd number for calculating density. To me, it's like almost like 15 or 20. So I bumped it up to 20 units per acre for that one. But we don't even have a reference to a density in the R40 for multifamily currently. We do say 4 units per acre in R20. So theoretically, an R40 is a less dense zoning district. So you think that you probably would not want to be any denser than the R20. An attorney had suggested that perhaps it accidentally got dropped from our regulations, but we have to go back and look. But I was, again, rounding those suggested densities up to 5 units per acre.
Are we looking at the attorney?
Yeah.
There's only one attorney in the room.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all bagged.
I'm going to turn my hearing aids down. No, and then we're also do some housekeeping on open space, adding open space requirements, which we have now 10% for multifamily, 15% when it's in the R20M. So I added in 10% in most, but when we start getting into some of the higher densities, 15% open space. We don't require developable land calculation. Some towns require the density to be based upon pulling out wetlands, pulling out steep slopes. I'm suggesting you stay with that approach, not having a developable land calculation. If it's 10 acres, it's 10 acres. Some towns say, well, if it's 10 acres, but you have four acres of wetlands and 1 acre of steep slope, theoretically, you have less of a carrying capacity to hold density. So you shouldn't be able to say 10 units per acre, but the bulk standards of building height and setbacks and parking start to govern that density de facto anyways. So I was suggesting we stay that way. And then I'm suggesting you consider a set aside for every multifamily development. As part of every development, there would need to be a certain percentage of housing units that would need to be set aside, deed restricted to either 80 for individuals or families earning 80% of AMI, or depending on the number of units that are proposed, perhaps 60% AMI. And that will help us to get from our 6% threshold to get up to where we need to be at 10%, although that's going to change at some point with the assignment of what every town needs to achieve. So that's a lot I threw out there, I know. So think about it. We can pick it up on the 8th again. Mm-hmm. And the intent is to move forward with amendments and bring this to a hearing at the second meeting in May. So we have time to hold a second hearing if it needs to be continued, and then have us go through the appeal, 15-day appeal period, and have this adopted by July 1. And just one final item. There is a big, thick package also there for you.
Mm-hmm.
With tabs that
yellow sticky. Nice.
Very impressive.
So yeah. I will be issuing a memo that is itemized by number and explains what's in each of those tabs.
New and approved regulations.
Little trees.
That's it on that one. Any questions on regulations?
Nope. Yeah, they'll change.
Hearing none.
Fifth district, we're moving forward on. I don't have anything more to really report. I probably will have something at the next meeting. I did provide you with a map, a couple of maps for districts at the last meeting. If you had any thoughts on that, please bring them to the next meeting. We did talk about it at EDC on last week, I believe it was. And there was discussion of perhaps having a joint meeting with the EDC to talk about where those limits would be, and bringing a joint recommendation to town council. We still have more homework to do to make sure that we're within the 10% threshold for the value of it as well. So that is still a work in progress. And EDC suggested and would like to take upon the role as the advisory committee to council on that. I thought it was a good thought. And then the last item I have in my report is we had spoke about, I'm trying to find my paper, I got my things all messed up, establishing a committee for the housing plan and the COCD.
Yes.
I'm trying to find my cheat sheet with the of the commission. So we talked about it being the mayor, a member of town council, a member of the Board of Ed, Conservation Commission, a member of Economic Development, Housing Authority, Inland Wetlands, Parks and Rec, Planning and Zoning Commission, Public Safety Utility Advisory Committee, and WPCA. If you all are in agreement, I'd like to send a letter out to each of the commissions asking them to elect or appoint one member to be part of that advisory committee, so we can get that process moving along.
Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Fabulous.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Dennis.
Question.
You have a question?
I have a question. Would it be possible, since Commissioner Terry brought up the fact that capacity of water, housing and stuff, could you give us, and you talked about village apartments. When we meet again, could you tell us how many open permits we have for housing and apartments? I think we're in, based on this, I think we're probably broaching a pretty high number. Could you bring that to us? All right, thanks. Appreciate that.
You good?
And I would like to mention on that water and sewer capacity, that's all part of the housing plan. We have to take that into account, and but now we're kind of in some respects being forced to kind of really put that up front right now to understand that a little bit. But that is something that we have to take into consideration with our housing plan. Whatever that's worth. So.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Wills. Thank you, Dennis. Item 11, other business. We have none this evening. Correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, you've already corrected me. Thank you. Item 12, correspondence, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. This is all for informational purposes.
Mm-hmm.
We're all capable of reading. We're graduating mm-hmm. high school.
Or college.
take that package home and read it. We don't need to discuss it here. Most of it we have no action or opinion to be given on. Which leads us to agenda item 13, executive session. I'd like to state on the record that at 8:43, we're going to go into executive session, and that's going to be staff and the commission, correct?
You got it.
Get in there.
Just there, young man.
Okay, Stace, thank you very much. Okay, let the record show it is 8:50. We have returned from executive session. and no decisions made, no votes taken. So we're going to move on to agenda item 14, which is to consider and act on a motion to settle on George, docket number KNLCV-24-6070649-S, and Dombrowski, docket number KNLCV-24-607-0650-S versus the PZC. Okay, making a motion. The terms of the settlement of the Court Appeals, George versus PZC, docket number KNLCV-24-6070-649-S, and Dombrowski versus PZC, docket number KNLCV-24-6070650-S, as presented to the Montville Planning and Zoning Commission in executive session at its regular meeting tonight, and as generally set out on writing prepared by counsel for the parties at a court-sanctioned mediation conducted by Judge Edward V. O'Hanlon on February 20th, 2026, are hereby approved for the reasons, among others, that the Commission finds the terms to be fair to all parties to the litigation and to be in the interests of the town, including its interest in developing additional single-family housing to meet the needs of current and future residents, such terms being subject to such non-substantive changes as the parties might agree to, with any such changes to be subject to the approval of the Commission's counsel.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? There you have it.
Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you, everybody.
Over an hour and a half to go.